hit by Ukrainian shelling. An ambulance took her to the hospital. But a second didn't arrive fast enough, so a local volunteer, Andrei, puts the child's mother in the back of his van and drives her there himself. Ukraine has a history of shelling civilians in Donetsk since 2014. Over recent days, they've increased the slaughter. More than a dozen have been killed in the last 4 days. Nowhere in the city is safe. 2 supermarkets were hit in the space of 2 days.
The city has been hit hard today, multiple strikes around the center. The death toll is already up to 5. We're racing around the city to check out the damage.
We pass a market. It caught on fire due to a strike. Flowers are placed outside for a woman killed at the same spot a few weeks ago. We arrive at the site of another strike. There's a body on the ground and 2 more inside.
Now, while many of the attacks by Ukraine and Donetsk are aimed at civil infrastructure, administration buildings, some are simple terror attacks against civilians. The building here is a youth center. The woman who was killed is still lying just down there, covered in a blanket.
The woman was later identified as Maria Pirogova, a young deputy of the DPR authorities. Another killed was Vadim Lobozov, a singer in a music band.
Now, I've tried to talk to a couple of people at the scene here, but they didn't want to. They're simply too traumatized to speak. One man breaking down in tears by the side of the road. And frankly, my fixer, my translator, is very keen for us to get out of here because at any moment, these strikes can happen again. Right across the city, they've been happening today. And no doubt there'll be more anytime soon.
Andrei, the volunteer who took the mother to the hospital in Kubayevsky.
They shell the center of Donetsk on purpose, to scare people, to create an unstable zone in the city, so that people will complain, to provoke. To me, they're not warriors who fight with other warriors. They fight civilians. So I think they do not deserve to be called military. They should be classified as war criminals by a military court.
While Russia launches major attacks on energy infrastructure, in a shockingly underreported story, Ukraine is launching attacks on civilians, whom it claims to be its own citizens. Few people are on the streets today, as more strikes are expected. Johnny Miller, Donetsk.
Doors at food banks across the UK are seeing more people come through now than ever before, as food and energy costs rise. Beans, noodles and fruit. Food packaged up for people in crisis, not in the developing world, but in northwest London.
One of the thousands of centres across the UK. All this food is sorted, packaged and distributed by the volunteers here to people who desperately need them. Without them, they go hungry.
Sarah, who asked her face not to be shown, told us she'd go days without food so her 3 children could eat.
I go days without eating as long as they get fed. I can go days without it. I can do it, but it's them I'm concerned. It's worrying for me for them to go without food. But I can go without food for a couple of days or so, just eat, drink milk, hot chocolate, yogurts and stuff, so they can have a full meal. Like, everything I have, it's all for them. So, you know, it is difficult.
Independent charity provides aid to 800 food bank users. And with the UK's economic downturn making the poor even poorer, they're warning more people will be knocking on their doors.
According to the government's new budget, benefits will be increasing in line with inflation, but that's not until April. So that means our guests will continue to struggle throughout the winter for the next few months, throughout the rain and snow and cold weather.
Food banks are now at breaking point due to a tsunami of need driven by the cost of living crisis.
Regular donors are unable to donate what they used to. Funders have less money to give to support because of all of that was spent during the pandemic. So while our demand is still the same, the support that we need to provide it is running out.
Charities estimate more than 2 million people in Britain now depend on food aid. For now, help is around, with those in need hoping the country's economic outlook improves. The question is how long that will take. Saeed Puriza, London.
A conference has been held in the Gaza Strip to support Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. It is dubbed Judaization of Al-Quds and Ways to Confront It. Experts, academics, and senior Palestinian officials have attended the conference. They have discussed ways to tackle the growing Israeli violence against Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. This, as Israeli officials have been trying to Judaize the holy Muslim city of Al-Quds in the past by demolishing Palestinian homes and building illegal Jewish settlements.
We are holding this conference to support Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque and to reaffirm the Islamic identity of Al-Quds. Holding this event this year is of great significance amid the escalation of Zionist aggressions against Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Palestinians consider Al-Quds as the capital of their future state. The Hamas movement asserted the Islamic and Arab identity of Al-Quds and refuted all Israeli claims to the holy city.
Al-Quds was never a state or a capital of a state for the Jews. All the history indicated that it was part of Palestine, and Palestine was and still is a part of the Arabic countries, which is a part of the Islamic world.
Occupied by Israeli regime forces 55 years ago, Al-Quds has been at the core of the Palestinian struggle for freedom. Those who attended the conference slammed the normalization of ties between some Arab countries and the Israeli regime. In its final communique, the conference stressed the importance of protecting Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque against all Israeli plots. Observers say the international community has failed to help Palestinians in Al-Quds and has been turning a blind eye to violations committed by the Israeli regime against them for decades. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
It's just another attempt to mute the voice of the voiceless. Prost TV managers were not surprised by Eurosat's decision to stop broadcasting the news outlet, as they say this is not the first time Prost TV is being banned in the West.
Well, this gesture by the West is not anything new in terms of Prost TV and even some of its, sister channels. So it puts under the microscope the real intention behind this. So the way this appears to be is that it's part of a bigger picture of this maximum pressure campaign that's been exerted on Iran. I am sure there's some geopolitical interest involved in terms of trying to limit Iran's reach when it comes to the media. But in particular, obviously, another reason for this act by the West, which is really against the pillars that they actually advocate, which is freedom of speech.
Eutelsat is a French satellite operator providing coverage over the entire European continent, the Middle East, Africa, Asia, and the Americas. It is the world's third largest satellite operator in terms of revenues. In mid-November, the European Union imposed sanctions on Prost TV over claims that the news network airs forced confessions of detainees in connection with the recent unrest in Iran.
I've been working here at Prost TV for almost a decade now, and I can tell you that Prost TV has not aired any confessions whatsoever, forced or unforced. So that shows you how such decisions by the EU and the like are based on unfounded claims with no basis in reality. And these sanctions on Prost TV I see as part of the media war and their narrative control. They want to present the war with their distorted version of what's going on in Iran these days, and seemingly they don't feel much comfortable with Prost TV challenging their narrative. So they would try everything to silence us or make us less heard, but we're not going to be silenced.
In 2013, Prost TV was brought off the air in the UK after media regulator Ofcom revoked its license over alleged breaching of its rules. In the same year, it was taken off the air in North America after the U.S. Treasury Department placed sanctions against the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. Prost TV was also dropped from the Galaxy 19 satellite platform that allowed it to be broadcast in the United States and Canada. Prost TV has also repeatedly fallen victim to censorship on multiple social media platforms, including Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube.
It's not the first time, and perhaps not the last time, that the West has attempted to pull the plug on Prost TV. However, the news network says it will continue its professional journalism based on its motto of being a voice for the voiceless. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
The Supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless Thou forgives it, and leave no grief unless Thou takes it away, and leave no enemy, and leave no enemy unless Thou repelst him. By means of In the Name of Allah, the Best of the Names. In the Name of Allah, Lord of Earth and Heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is His anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is His good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from Thee, O Patron of Beneficence.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Iran condemns the unfounded allegations raised in a joint statement by members of the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council. The controversial joint statement dealt, among other things, with the three Iranian-owned islands. Iran has said the statement is nothing but a rehash of failed policies to promote Iranophobia. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at why the GCC group of Persian Gulf countries pursues such failed policies when it comes to Iran, when it is fully aware that Iran will go to any length to protect its territory and territorial integrity. Let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Tim Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator, joins us from London. Also joining us is Feroslav Najim, human rights activist, who joins us from Ottawa.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both, Tim Mohsen Abbas. I'll first start with you. You have this controversial joint statement that was issued by the GCC group of Persian Gulf countries, and one of the things that is said is it's a rehash of something that's been said in the past regarding the three islands, the Strait of Hormuz, that are Iranian territory and Iranian owned, but the UAE, for example, claims it's part of its territory. Why do they keep pursuing a failed policy like that?
Because they're ordered to do so from Tel Aviv and Washington, D.C., and as part of the maximum pressure on the Islamic Republic of Iran, they'll leave no stone unturned, no matter how, you know, ridiculous and how, you know, old or dated that might be. I mean, to raise this issue, it simply creates more potential conflict. It creates tension. It creates confusion, and it creates the possibility of the Islamic Republic of Iran becoming more defensive than it already is against the military intentions of Tel Aviv and the Anglo-Zionist Empire in general. And the GCC, whichever way you want to look at it, the reality of it is that it is a puppet organization. It's just really there as a way of trying to get all the American proxies, because that's what they are, Qatar, you know, the UAE, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, the rest of them, they're all basically puppets and proxies. They rely totally on the military power of the West for their existence. They funnel out most of their wealth, the people's oil wealth and gas wealth, into Swiss bank accounts, and they turn it into $3 trillion worth of real estate, for instance, in America. And they also are used, as Donald Trump said very, very, you know, honestly, that they are used as cows to be milked, not only Saudi Arabia, but also the Qataris and the rest of the GCC. This is their status in reality. So when they tell the Islamic Republic Iran to do this or that, really what they're doing is executing the Israeli you know, Yinon plan. They're essentially working for the Oden Yinon plan, which is essentially giving Israel dominance in that entire region. And that's what they are. All of these nations ultimately are client states of the Anglo-Zionist empire. And what they've done here is just another example of that, just towing the line.
Well, we do have to mention Farrell Sanajim also, since we're on this topic, which is somewhat related, the idea and the notion of how Persian Gulf is something that they also don't like and don't make reference to it as such, because the word Persian Gulf has been the only name used for the water area that's between the Arabian, as you're well aware, between the Arabian Peninsula and the Iranian Plateau since 500 BC, right? So we know that, and it's always going to remain that name, and it will remain that name forever. But they still deem to not want to call it that, and they want to call it other names that excludes the name Persian from Gulf. Again, the question is, why do they want to do that?
It's very clear, as the colleague was talking about, that their puppet regimes, they were installed by the British colonizers, and they were raised by the colonizers to learn how to colonize and how to manipulate and steal and fabricate. And this is what they're doing right now. They're trying to implement what they were taught by the colonizers that put them in power. And this is why they're always trying to exploit. They're trying to control things in their hands, but they really don't have any control. They've never really gained any control in the region. They've never had any real true sovereignty. And why would Iran, for instance, give those, or even think about giving those islands to, the UAE regime? What would it be used for? It'll be just another U.S. base, that will work against the region's interests and will work on destabilizing more countries, collecting more intelligence to infiltrate in another country as what they did in Libya or in Iraq or in Syria or in Afghanistan or different countries. So what is the purpose behind this goal right now and to raise it up at this point where the tensions are a little bit lesser, I think, at the point between, the West Asian countries? The situation right now is kind of focused on, the West is actually focused on internally causing problems inside Iran. Why would the UAE right now and these regimes raise this up and put more pressure against Iran? That means they're working for the interest of the West to destabilize Iran more and put more pressure on Iran. And this is exactly what they're doing also with Ukraine. They're putting pressure on Ukraine to blame the Russian attacks, saying that the weapons are coming in from Iran. So they're trying to do maximum pressure from all dimensions to destabilize Iran and to weaken Iran and to cause more turmoil inside Iran and destabilization. And it's going to fail miserably, as it always did. But this just shows the evil face of the GCC regime at a time where Iran needs support. Iran needs a real neighbor that will support them. And they're talking about this. What else would the UAE do with those islands other than give it to the U.S.? Maybe they would do, make it a corrupt island where all the foreigners can come there and drink alcohol and, dance and nightclubs and all this kind of stuff that is obviously not in the interests of Muslims and their moral code and their ethics and principles.
Uh-huh. Well, we're zooming in on this summit and the statement that came at the end of it in the form of, I guess you want to call it a communique, but it lacks some facts. And there are some, I can't even call it half-truths because it's just basically false. And one of them, which is an eye-opener, say Mohsen Abbas, is the fact that the group accused Iran of continuing to support terror groups. And then they mentioned the countries, Iraq, Lebanon, Syria, and Yemen. But as far as I remember, aren't they the ones who did that? I mean, isn't Saudi Arabia at the forefront? So how could they even come out with a statement like that?
Well, forget about Saudi proxy terror groups. Saudi itself today is the greatest terror force, perhaps, of the Arab nations in action in Yemen. I mean, their track record there is that over these last few years, they've managed to create the biggest humanitarian crisis, a famine beyond all proportions that even the UN has to sort of call out. Cholera has been rife. They've created a destruction of all the civil infrastructure, bombed weddings, bombed funerals. They've left nothing sacred, the Saudis there. That's one element. But then if we look into their connections with Al-Qaeda and the germination of the Takfiri terror in that region, which has been the main cause of much of the proxy terror caused on the entire region, they were funders of it. They were hand in glove with the Americans creating all of these Takfiri groups. They've also, of course, their other colleagues over in Qatar have been very much in with the Ikhwan al-Muslimin and the other terror elements that have popped up in that region. The emergence of the likes of Jabhat al-Nusra and others in Syria, all of these nations are fully implicated in funding and supporting and financing their destruction and their sort of head chopping and whatever else they've got up to in the whole region. And the only force that has prevented ISIS and Takfiri terrorism becoming a reality for all of the nations in that region was Lieutenant General Soleimani and the Islamic resistance or the resistance axis in the region, of which, of course, Iran is the lead and the head. And this is what irks the GCC, because look, they created something they call the Peninsula Shield Force in 2011. That was back in 2004, actually. 2011, they actually created the first operation, which was against Bahrain and to destroy the Arab Spring, the only real legitimate Arab Spring protest, which was there in Bahrain. And they used it as a way of destroying them again. Housing the Fifth Fleet, the American Fifth Fleet, housing American bases, giving full carte blanche to the U.S., etc., to do as they like militarily in their regions and to try and wrest the Persian Gulf away from Iranian control. This is all part of the Zionist strategy, and they're in dreamland, but they're going to give it a go.
Well, you mentioned not only that peninsula, I believe you said SHIELD, back in 2004. At some point years ago, I think it was during the former U.S. President Donald Trump, first al-Najim, where they came up with the so-called Arabian NATO. I wonder where that is right now. So they've come up with these things. And, of course, they have their military bases, such as the Persian Gulf island of Bahrain, and, of course, Saudi Arabia itself, and then Qatar, et cetera. I'm wondering why they come and they have zoomed in on this really tired phrase, where Iran has called it Iranophobia, amongst other things. Is it because it was in the presence of the Chinese president and they wanted to portray Iran that way and maybe sway the Chinese president through whatever dealings they're having with China, thinking that they can alter China's point of view when it comes to Iran?
Yes, I mean, they're a manipulative force and in the region, and they were installed by the British, then later upgraded by the U.S., and they're taking instructions from their bosses, and their bosses want to put maximum pressure on Iran, and they want to cause more sedition in the region. This is all it's about. This is, they do not care about the interests of the region. They do not care about the unity of the region. And Iran has always been a force of stabilization, a force that is fighting the terrorists in the region, that's supporting human rights and fighting the human rights violators in Israel and different areas. They have always supported, their neighboring countries, and they've always opened their hands and the doors to build relations with all these Gulf region countries. They've always said that we're here as neighbors and we have to coexist, we have to live together, we have to build unity, we have to stabilize our region, we have to kick out the Americans out of the region, meaning the American forces, we have to kick out the British forces, we have to kick out these colonizers from the region, and we have to build our own region. And we have to not let any other, military force come in and infiltrate in a Muslim country or Arab country or a Persian country. And this is what Iran has always opened the door for since the establishment of the Islamic Republic of Iran. But they took always the wrong approach, and they supported Saddam in the eight-year war against Iran. They have done so much destruction and so much, and Iran is still willing to open the door and forget about the past or put it to the side and build for the future, but they still continue to follow the instructions of the U.S., and this is going to take them into a loss. They will endfully be doomed in these plans, because look at everybody else that followed the American instructions endfully where they were. Look at what happened in Afghanistan. Those people that were puppets for the U.S. regime were endfully, thrown out, dumped out, the Shah. What about, Mohammad Reza Pahlavi? He was thrown out. They wouldn't even give him refugee status in the U.S. or any of these Western countries that supported him in a certain time and had him, implementing their agenda. At the end of the day, all the people that serve the U.S. and fully go down. Even Trump now, the Zionist lobbies have thrown him out. They said that, he even complained about that recently. He said, I was one of the biggest servants to the Israeli regime, and now they're treating me like nothing, because they've got what they wanted from me, and now they're not taking care of me, they're not supporting me. So even this shows you that even these Western region politicians are being sold out by the ones that are using them for whatever interest they have.
One of the statements that I'm looking at here, and I want to quote actually occurred in this, is the Chinese president said, that China and the GCC group of Persian Gulf countries should be partners for common security, and that China will continue to firmly support the GCC countries of the Persian Gulf in safeguarding their security and support the efforts by countries in the region, to resolve differences through dialogue and consultation in order to build a collective security architecture. Okay, so basically you have security at the core there. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, but we did have something like that along those lines that was proposed by the former Iranian president, Hassan Rouhani, where it was called the Coalition for Hope. He presented that at the UN, and this was for the Strait of Hormuz, but he said it could apply to the wider region. And basically, reiterating what came out of the summit, but they're demonizing Iran. Iran has always been a supporter of peace in the region. Why can't they then turn or do an about-face on this failed policy and merge, if they're sincere, their security concerns into one?
You see, the leaders are the problem. The people who are in power, all of those puppet, totalitarian, despotic kings and monarchs, they are illegitimate folk who are there basically looking over their shoulders for the day when the people actually wake up and basically get rid of them. But all of their finances end up in the Swiss bank accounts. The day they're overthrown, those will be gazumped. They have no real policy. What irks me is that while Iran has a vision, it has a political system which is unique, it has a focus on manufacturing, technological, industrial advancement. It has a focus on educating its women. It has a focus on building, developing self-sufficiency. And it has an opposition to, oppression in the region. These are clear-cut policies, foreign policy. And they've consistently rolled out these policies for the betterment of the Iranian people and for the in the region. They've helped Iraq, for instance, at a time when ISIS was take it over. They've helped Iraq in terms of electricity and other energy needs. They've supported the Yemeni people against, the hegemony of the Anglo-Zionist Empire. Wherever Iran has supported, it's done it because people are being unjustly oppressed. Now, the problem is these leaders in the GCC are the oppressors. They are fundamentally geared up and made in a way where they are unjust. They can't support the kind of justice policies which Iran promotes. They can't support the social, environmental, economic, or educational, or family, cultural, edification of humanity policies which Iran stands for, because Iran is rooted in an Islamic ethos and ideology genuinely, whereas these Gulf nations, the other crime they've committed is they produced a takfiri, sort of a real draconian kind of Islamic ideology, which they've sold, especially most criminally, to the likes of Pakistan and Bangladesh and others, and created terror groups. Well, there is an ideological problem here, because these Zionist-controlled puppet Arabs who front a lot of wealth for them and siphoning out, are being, in a way, feeling the challenge. They're scared of Iran because it stands for the truth. It stands for a new order. And what do the Iranians say? They said, look, let's get rid of the foreign powers in this region. What has America got to do with being based around this region? Is it part of West Asia? No, it's not. It's there primarily to make sure that Israel continues its kind of domination for whatever purposes, whatever reasons those are. Now, Iran is saying, look, let's deal with our own situation. But consistently, these GCC leaders are actually working to the detriment of their own people. Fine. For a while, they've got so much oil that they're being shut up by giving people money within their nations. But that's not going to last. What's going to happen when the carbon energy goes? Will the Americans feel as close to them? Will they support them militarily as much as they did? I think that they're getting used and they need to change tack. They need to see that Iran is the perennial power in that region. There's nothing that is going to stop the Islamic Republic of Iran becoming the dominant force. It already is. And it's inevitable that these smaller Arab nations will have to tie in with the new thinking and the new dream. I'd say call it the Khomeini prophetic dream of a just Islamic world, sure, and a just West Asia. Yeah.
Well, you have momentum that continues to be built up. We know for us on Najim, for example, that there are talks that are happening with Iraq as a mediator, albeit not that frequently, but it has gained momentum between Saudi Arabia and Iran. But in terms of it being full-fledged, there's really not much coming out of either camp in terms of any achievements moving forward. But I'm wondering whether the opportunity might exist based on the visit by the Chinese president to the region and the somewhat aspirational provisions that they have set between China and the countries of the Persian Gulf, the former GCC, as for China to then be the channel where it can tie these converging powers together and in a sense not mediate, but make sure that I don't want to say replaces the U.S., but makes sure that this region preserves its identity and territorial integrity. Do you think that China may be the answer to that?
I mean, China could be the answer to that and possibly open the door for mediation and building better relations. But the thing is, this meeting was, if it wasn't approved by the U.S., those GCC countries wouldn't sit down with the Chinese president. At the same time, I think they really exploited the situation and installed that part of the island situation inside without him really looking into all the details of that possibly. And then, you know, because they had him as a backup and then they wanted to, you know, ignite that file there and that case. So I don't think that really the Saudis and the GCC are interested in really building relations with Iran because the instructions from their bosses is to maximize pressure against Iran. Yeah.
Let me squeeze in a last question here for Simhasan Abbas. Simhasan Abbas, the reason why I asked that question is because we know that Iran and China have a partnership agreement, a strategic one, that spans, I believe, 25 years. And here we have China visiting the region and, of course, pledging what it has in terms of it overall bringing China closer to these countries. So when you have Iran, which is in the region, along with the other countries, how do you think all this is going to play out, do you think? In 1 minute, please.
Well, the Eurasian axis is inevitability. Russia's ties with Iran are significant and they're growing. The Chinese can't do Belt Road Initiative without the Islamic Republic of Iran or Iraq and this crucial area where Iran has a huge influence. Belatedly, the GCC countries are beginning to clock onto this, and there is this kind of tension going on about where their position will be in the future, but the Americans and the Israelis are not letting them go. So although the natural inclination of the GCC should be to align with of course, China and be part of this Belt Road Initiative, and by default, align with Iran as well, there's this kind of struggle going on internally where what they should do can't be done because Tel Aviv and Washington won't allow it. And I think the fact that they raised these issues of these islands was a deliberate way of telling China, look, you're not going to get a free ride through by building your Belt Road around here because we can still dictate the conflict and the divisions, and we can still manipulate the natural inclinations of these despots against Iran and the Iranophobia that they seem to have integrally within their character, because there is that reality of the fear of the Persian and the fear of Iran as a whole from a traditional historical point of view. So they're rattling that cage, and I think the Chinese are being given that warning by the Americans through their proxies here.
Thank you for that. Saeed Mohsen Abbas, we appreciate it. Journalist and political commentator from London. Thank you so much. Firzhan Najim, thank you. Human rights activist there from Ottawa. Thank you to you both. And we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight from Yikova Tagway and the team. It's goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forests, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, closer, Iran,
hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Salam. I have an appointment with the director.
Yes, yes. Come in, please.
Thank you.
You are Miss Mitra. How do you do? Thank you for coming.
How do you do?
We are making a documentary about the historical four-season bathhouse of the city of Arak, and we need your presence in this film.
That's wonderful. So I'll get ready for the trip. The historical four-season bathhouse in the city of Arak, the capital of Markazi province, central Iran, is considered one of the most beautiful architectural works in Iran. The four-season bath complex in Arak is considered an architectural masterpiece for its specific ornaments, paintings, and tile work. Banai script, mosaic, and polychrome tiles are the most spectacular ornaments used in the bath structure. The tiles have craftily been used to cover the body of the complex and portray the beautiful images of human beings as well as different animals and flowers. The historical bath dates back to the Qajari Dira, established by Haj Muhammad Ibrahim Khansari in Ahmad Shah's ruling period. A part of the Arak four-season bath has turned into a museum wherein precious objects from different historical periods are displayed. The bath was registered as one of the national historical buildings of Iran, and it is considered as one of the Markazi province's tourist attractions. Well, I am now at the site of the four-season bath of Arak. My reason for speaking calmly is that I am actually at the location of making the documentary, and everybody is getting ready for the job. Honestly, I'm a little bit stressed. I'm camera shy. Don't know whether I could do the job very well. Pray for me. Anyway, you can't believe how beautiful this place is. Here is one of the masterpieces of Iranian architecture. Its tile work and decorations are unique. And you know why it's called Four Season? Okay, the bath is named Four Season due to the tile work of its sarbine, or changing room, which depicts the four seasons of the year. Spring, summer, fall, and winter.
It's your turn.
Oh, yes. I'm ready.
Three, two, one, action.
The building of the Four Seasons Bathhouse is one of the most beautiful architectural...
Cut. Please slower and with more emotion.
Okay.
Three, two, one, action.
The building of the Four Seasons Bathhouse is one of the most beautiful architectural and tile works in Iran in recent centuries that is considered a unique monument in Iranian architecture for its special decorations. The 1,600 square meter bathhouse consists of four baths, one for women, one for men, one for religious minorities, and a private bath. The sarbine, or the changing room, has eight pillars, a high dome, and pleasing tile work and stucco reliefs with arabesque motifs, as well as paintings of historical scenes.
Cut. Thank you. It was great.
Okay, it's time for a short break. What is interesting is that the water required for the bath was supplied by a kanat. The first floor of this building is about 3 meters lower than the street floor, so water is easily and with less loss of heat transferred to the bath. The women's locker room is one of the most beautiful parts of this building, which has an integrated dome without columns. The roof of all parts of the bathroom is arched dome. The cruciform pool is located on the floor of the locker room, which is made of black stone and is used to spray people who come out of the hot bath. The large storage tanks for water and cistern are in the middle of the building to make it easy to heat for use. Seven color tiles and mosaic tiles are the most important decorations used in the bathroom. Designed and executed very artistically, these designs have beautiful human, animal, and various plant roles and landscapes of rivers, springs, wild plants, and beds on the branches. The colors used in the tiles are mostly yellow, azure, turquoise, white, green, gray, red, and orange.
Are you ready? Three, two, one, action.
The bathhouse became the location of the Iraq Anthropology Museum and houses wax figures as well as Qajar marriage deeds, spooling equipment, copper pots, manuscripts, and embossed metal dishes.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.